This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
The latest buzzword in America is the word sustainable or sustainability. Do you know what it means? Well, you might have thought that you knew what it meant, but maybe you don't. Maybe it has some unique implications and applications that perhaps we're not fully aware of. We want things to be sustainable, don't we? I mean, absolutely. We don't want chaos. We don't want things to be in upheaval all the time, whether in our genuine neighborhoods or in our nation or throughout the world. We want things to be basically under control, sustainable, so to speak. In other words, we don't always want to be struggling about this, that, or the other. But what if the implications of the word actually are rather different than what you might think you desire? For instance, what if it means that you're delegating responsibility to someone else to make your life sustainable? And what if that someone else happens to be government? What if something else happens to be not just your government, but a global government? You see, today on Viewpoint, as we talk about these issues, many of our listeners know we talk about the issue of globalism. We talk about all these different issues. But today we're going to zero in. We're going to zero in on one particular aspect. In fact, our guest today has written a book called The Race to Zero. We'll have to find out what that means, the race to zero. And he's talking about a particular, shall we say, acronym. Now, Americans, we're just completely filled up with acronyms, aren't we? If you watch the television, you'll hear probably during any particular program, 3, 4, or 5 different promotions concerning some sort of a medical condition. Have you noticed they don't use the terminology that actually describes that medical condition anymore? They use abbreviations, acronyms, letters like ESG or maybe like DEI. Now, those are not medical terms. Those are terms that are being used in a similar kind of way to distill a much, much bigger viewpoint. The problem is we don't understand the depths of what lurks behind those letters. So today on Viewpoint, we're going to help to dig out from under some of that, the depths of that understanding with our special guest, Paul Tice, joining us from the northern East Coast, sort of northern East Coast, in New Jersey. And he's written a fascinating book called The Race to Zero, How ESG Investing Will Crater the Global Financial System. Now, we're going to have to be very careful here, as Paul well knows, because he's up into this, up to his eyeballs, and my eyeballs are not quite up to that, but at least I comprehend the greater picture of what he's translating in this book. But we need to translate that to you, because it has tremendous import for each one of us. So, Paul, it's good to have you on the program.
Hi, Chuck. It's good to be with you.
Well, you've got quite a history in the financial world. Can you take us on a 30-second trek down through that?
Sure. So I worked for 40 years on Wall Street. The first half, I was a sell-side research analyst. The second half, I was an investor. Worked at a number of different firms, mainly J.P. Morgan, Lehman Brothers, and BlackRock over the years. And you know,
did that give you a black name to work at BlackRock?
Well, I was actually there. I left almost 10 years ago.
Oh, so okay.
That was roughly the time when sustainability was really taking off. So it's gotten progressively worse across the industry since then. But you could see the beginnings of it back in the early 2010s. And then they're obviously the leader now when it comes to ESG.
Well, as a good trial lawyer, it's necessary for me to qualify my witnesses here on the program, and I think you've just done that in a distilled fashion. You know, interestingly, from a biblical standpoint, your 40 years at Wall Street, 40 years is the number of testing in the Bible. Did you know that?
No, I'm well aware of that.
So you've been tested, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, it gives you perspective for someone who's worked in the markets about ESG, which has really been forced on the markets over the last decade aggressively. And one of the reasons why I wrote the book is because no one who's an insider who's worked on Wall Street has ever offered a criticism or a contrarian view about ESG because you're not allowed to speak out.
Right, they can't afford to.
Yeah, no, and I experienced that directly. So I thought it was important to kind of give voice to what I think is a silent majority in the industry.
I'm so glad that you did. It's very similar to DEI, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. That's the social aspect of it. You're talking about the financial aspect of it that actually crosses over. And no matter where you are, these are enforced upon you, both through the culture and even through government enforcement, aren't they?
Yeah, so ESG, you know, it basically is inclusive of every progressive goal over the last 100 years. Now,
wow.
We've rebranded all of those progressive wants into a framework, and the argument is that you should use ESG factors to set your company policy and to set your investment decision-making, as opposed to using financial factors like we've done up until now.
All right, so ESG, let's define our terms. ESG, I understand, means environmental, social, and governance.
Right.
Environmental, social, and government. Well, that just about includes everything, doesn't it, except the religious? And even there, it's included, I think, by implication.
Yeah, that's a main problem with ESG. You're basically defining everything, because I can take every aspect of a company investment and put it either in an E or an S or a G column.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all-encompassing. It basically proves nothing. But at the end of the day, these are all non-financial factors, and the argument is that they're going to lead to the creation of financial value over the long term, and it's never been proved to be a positive catalyst. With all the research that we've seen published over the last several years, none of it proves conclusively that you can follow ESG investing and make more money. And if that's not true, then there's a fiduciary problem with pushing it on every portfolio.
Well, I can see that. It was several hundred years ago, a fellow by the name of Sir Thomas More wrote a book called Utopia. And we keep talking about utopia, utopia, utopia. And from most people's standpoint, the common definition of utopia is to reach some sort of a heaven on earth, right?
Yeah, no. And I think that's basically the implicit goal of ESG. It's been pushed by the United Nations.
Mm-hmm.
And so their mandate has changed over the last several decades. But as you mentioned before, sustainability, it sounds benign. It's something that everyone can agree to, but it's just the latest example of kind of the progressives like mangling the English language and using words that actually don't mean what they really do.
Thank you very much for saying that. And words count. We keep saying that here on this program. Words count, friends. We've got to keep from getting sucked into the tremendous deception that is sweeping our country and the world. We'll be right back with Paul in just a moment.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues and homosexuality was an abomination. So what happened in just one generation? Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment? Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Welcome back to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Crismeyer. It's conversation, as always, with ever-increasing conviction, talk that transforms, and I trust that today will be no exception. Yes, we're going to be filled with a lot of information here today, but the purpose of the information is to help us to govern our lives more effectively, more honestly, and to avoid the deception that is sweeping the earth. I mean, even Jesus himself said that the end times would be characterized primarily by deception. He warned his disciples of that 2 days before his crucifixion, and we're seeing it played out even now. It comes in the terms of, in the means of words, changing words, changing the meaning of words, hiding the meaning of words, adding to the meaning of words. And so words are being used, even, yes, to deceive. And one of those words is the word sustainability, which is kind of the buzzword of the ESG, environment, socialistic, and social and government terminology. And I want to make available our special guest book to you before I forget, so that it gets out there, The Race to Zero, How ESG Investing Will Crater the Global Financial System. And $27 is going to put this hardbound book in your hands. It's on our website, saveus.org. That's saveus.org. You can call us at 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check at $5 for postage and handling. Now, Paul, when you say the race to zero, what does that mean? Zero what?
Well, that's, you know, basically the ESG movement is primarily focused on climate change and getting to net zero in terms of emissions for the U.S. economy, mm-hmm. the global economy. So that's another important point why I wrote the book, is to focus in on climate change, because that's really the priority yeah. of the other side, and defunding oil and gas. And that is the issue that will touch every American, whether you're invested or not.
Yeah, well, it already is.
Yeah, and it's starting to already. But again, it will take on a whole new dimension if they succeed between now and 2030 in terms of their defunding goals.
All right, speaking of 2030 then, let's pick up on that. We know that Klaus Schwab with the World Economic Forum has set 2030 as the great reset for the world economy. We know that the United Nations has its Agenda 2030, which is designed to do largely the same thing. It seems that all the focus now, not only from the United Nations, that has just been meeting in New York, I believe, but also the World Economic Forum, and by implication, the major corporations and non-governmental organizations all across the world have also set their focus on 2030, have they not?
Yeah, I mean, this is a real common timetable for all of these players. And as you named it, the United Nations is the one that's been leading on climate change, sustainable development, and also ESG investing, you know, for the last 40 years, right? The World Economic Forum, which is the chief advocate of stakeholder capitalism, has also been a fellow traveler with the United Nations. And so a lot of the information they put out is in support of the UN agenda.
Now, and what's interesting is that when Joe Biden was inaugurated, John Kerry, his then environmental czar, and one who was deep in his eyeballs with the World Economic Forum, declared publicly that the inauguration of Joe Biden was the catapulting event to launch the entire world into the New World Order, the Great Reset, and to fulfill all of these agendas that you're now talking about under this language of the social. I keep thinking of DEI because that's more common on my radar, but it's the environmental, social, and governance, ESG, that's all about.
Yeah, I would point out that DEI is a subset of ESG.
I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Right. Sustainability, I think, is the master bureaucracy, and everything reports to the head of sustainability. So
what do you make of the idea, then, that John Kerry made a very public declaration that the inauguration of Joe Biden was the catapulting event to bring all this into the fore for the world?
Yeah, no, I think that's true from their perspective. I mean, during the Trump years when he withdrew us from the Paris Agreement, he pushed back on the Clean Power Plan, you know, he stopped a lot of the forward momentum in terms of the climate agenda and mm-hmm. the ESG agenda.
And so globalism.
Exactly. It's all part of globalism. ESG is just the next phase of globalism and deindustrializing the West, right? I think we have to look at it in an historical context. So I think getting a Democrat back in the White House in 2021 was clearly key because these are all coordinated agendas mm-hmm. between liberal governments in Europe as well as North America. So I think that's true. That's why the election coming up this year is going to be even more critical because that will take us almost to 2030. And to complete the previous point, everyone is working on the same agenda, and climate change is embedded in sustainable development. It's embedded in ESG. So it's all about cutting emissions between now and 2030. There are a lot of significant targets that the U.S. has already set for cutting emissions by 50% between now and 2030. That's going to lead to a lot of economic damage, and it's ESG in the financial markets that's going to help them achieve that terrible goal.
And even in the pursuit of that, we understand just last week, Ford, the motor company Ford, announced that in the last year they lost $135,000 per electric vehicle that they created. They created, sold 10,000. They lost $135,000 per vehicle because they're just not going over in America. So there is a resistance to this in our country, I think.
Yeah, no, this is what happens when you have politicians try to force an energy and economic transition on the country. And even with significant subsidies for electric vehicles, both at the state and the federal level, you still can't actually change consumer behavior. So now, even though all the major OEMs are losing money on every electric vehicle, mm-hmm. We still have federal and state mandates that we're going to stop producing gas-powered vehicles and only produce EVs over the next 5 to 7 years.
This is a high-risk endeavor, and the ultimate effect of it, as you said, could be utterly devastating economically to the world, which actually sets the stage then for global government to take over and say, look at the mess we're in. You know, we got to get in here. We got to control all this. And that ushers in the fullness of the 2030 agenda, the Great Reset, globalism, whatever you want to call it. They're all part and parcel of the same thing, aren't they?
They are. It's all a coordinated agenda. It's being pushed on the markets by activists led by the United Nations, a network of NGOs. But standing behind those third parties are member governments of the UN, you know, Europe primarily, as well as the U.S. and Canada.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So it's basically state-directed capitalism, if you will, which is...
Sounds like fascism to me.
It is fascism. Right?
That is what fascism is, state...
Yeah. And in the book, I actually go through the history of stakeholder capitalism in Klaus Schwab, and you can see very strong similarities to what the Nazis and what Mussolini were doing back in the 30s.
So, back to the term sustainability, because that's the functional term that is used over and over and over again. All you can hear is sustainable this, sustainable that. It's the ultimate adjective that's being used. Sustainable. Everything has to be so-called sustainable, but nobody's defining what that means, at least in the common conversation with the average person. So we need to delve into that. But here's what I jotted down just before the program. It seems that sustainability is actually socialism by proxy.
I think that, well, yeah, that is clearly true. I mean, I think you can view this attack on capitalism, which ESG clearly is, as just the latest in a series of attacks. And they've all taken slightly different forms over the years.
Yeah.
But this is really no different from the direct approach with socialism.
Exactly.
And total government control.
But they don't want to bring it out as socialism because that's got a bad name. in many respects. So it comes out in sustainability.
Yeah, this is actually probably a greater threat in my mind than some of the previous ones because it is less than transparent.
Mm-hmm.
It's indirect. And again, it's mainly being accomplished through the financial markets, which is always somewhat opaque to most citizens.
So, all right. So when Bill Clinton said it's the economy, stupid, they're really taking that to heart and say we can manipulate the world. We can completely transfer the world by disguising socialism as capitalism and make it all about money.
Yeah, I mean, and as you mentioned before, this is all about political control.
Uh-huh. Right?
If we make climate change as an existential threat that justifies every policy step, whether good or bad, then you can control every individual's every economic decision, right? Their mobility, where they work, what they can buy, if we can track carbon emissions by product and service. So it's all about political control. Right. So that's why it's all consistent with the same 2030 agenda. It has nothing to do with saving the planet. And so
that's that's the excuse or the cover for what their real agenda is.
Sure. I mean, they're not going to take a direct approach and tell you this is bad for them. So they use, you know, non-threatening phrases like sustainability. So what does sustainability imply?
Right.
It implies that this will make companies and investment portfolios solvent. It will give them longer life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's no proof that will happen, right?
Right.
And I could argue that every ESG factor is basically a negative because it adds cost up front for a dubious financial payback down the road.
Huge costs up front.
Right. And actually last year we have a number of examples where companies will follow these progressive policies and they still go bankrupt. Right, we had a number of regional banks go away last year that forgot how to manage interest rate risk because they were more focused on DEI and virtue signaling. Right.
Yes.
And probably the greatest example of how fraudulent sustainability the argument is that Exxon and Mobil have been around. Exxon rather and Chevron have been around for 140 years, and the ESG movement will tell you those are non-sustainable companies. Right. Again, because of their carbon emissions, right? So it's basically opposite world when it comes to investing.
All right. But the bottom line of it all is to set up a system such that it requires total government control in the name of capitalism.
Right. It's basically a way of hijacking capitalism and using the private sector and the financial markets to fund a government agenda, really, starting with climate change.
All right.
Right?
Now,
right,
we're going to translate that, and you've done a great job of it in your book, of showing how the companies of our world, the major companies in the world, are being choreographed into this and how deep that really is already. The book, friends, The Race to Zero, How ESG Investing, that is environmental, social, government investing, will crater the global financial system. And then what will happen? Well, the Bible tells us what's going to happen. Read the book of Revelation, chapter 13. Tells us what's going to happen. You might want to read it. You might want to read it. You might even want to read my book, Antichrist, How to Identify the Coming Imposter. You might want to read it. Because these things are happening right in front of our eyes. We can talk about them in terms of environmentalism. We can talk about them in terms of economics. We can talk, but ultimately, there's a spiritual dimension of it. This is a religious belief system, friends. But it's not based upon God. It's based upon the rulership of government. All right, The Race to Zero, $27 hardbound book, yours on our website, saveus.org. Give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries. P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check and $5 for postage and handling, and Paul Tyson and I will be back with you in a couple of moments.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, SaveUS.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, SaveUS.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at SaveUS.org.
Under the 2030 agenda of the United Nations and also the World Economic Forum Great Reset of 2030, there's a new Ten Commandments that is being set forth. These Ten Commandments are not delivered by Moses. They're not delivered by God, but they're delivered by globalist government institutions. And they claim that they are instilling a new moral order. A new moral order, which means from their perspective, it requires absolute control. You must be told how to invest your money, and you won't be able to invest your money the way the government wants you to do it unless the means of investment are controlled also by government. So our guest today says, like most religious belief systems, the morality-driven sustainability movement is moving from evangelism to an even more puritanical phase. With the expansion of ESG bureaucracy, more exclusionary, prescriptive, and compulsory on the back of regulatory mandates. You went for the jugular on that, Paul. People do not normally see this thing as having a spiritual component, but at the very heart of it is, I think.
Yeah, if you look at all the people and you try to debate them, they clearly don't have objective arguments to make to justify ESG investing. So at the end of the day, you know, the discussion kind of morphs into just, you know, faith and belief on their part that this is what we should be doing. So
it's a new governmentally installed faith system where sustainability, which is a cover word for socialism, becomes the alternative of whether it be the Jewish faith or the Christian faith.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically imposing a morally subjective prism on investing and running companies as a means of controlling capitalism. Because, you know, capitalism has been, for the last 200 years, the main driver of personal freedom and a rise in living standards.
Right.
And fossil fuels has been the driver of capitalism. So there's a perfect logic to why climate change is the immediate ESG goal and cutting emissions, because by doing that, you'll be able to control every American's everyday life. So, but it clearly is a religion for the other side.
All right, we know that the climate changes. That's why we get weather reports. Our climate here in Richmond, Virginia is changing today. Yesterday it was sunny. Today it's going to be rainy. We have climate change that is constant over time. In the 1970s, we were warned, and I have all of the magazine covers to confirm it, we were warned of a global ice age that was coming, a mini ice age that was coming upon us. And we were told that the world was in desperate straits. Then, in the 1980s, we began to be told that a condition called global warming was taking over. And that also was an existential threat to the world. Then, by the end of the 1990s, we began to see that, well, the global warming could not be proven as an ongoing thing. And so by the 2000s, all of a sudden, they couldn't use global warming anymore. They had to use climate change. Why is it, how is it, Paul, that intelligent people, supposedly intelligent people and scientists and whatever, can embrace this kind of nonsense and sell it to the people?
Well, I think you have to follow the money, frankly. I mean, you've got government pumping out billions of dollars every year to support research justifying what has been a conclusion-driven theory for decades, really.
Now, is it a conclusion-driven theory, or is it an, shall we say, a vision-directed theory that this is what we need to accomplish in order to gain complete government control of the world?
Yeah, no, I think that that's always been the ultimate goal.
Uh-huh.
But clearly, you know, the facts have gotten in the way of the narrative along the way.
You know, I remember Joe Biden once said, "We believe in facts, not truth." You remember that? We believe in facts, not truth.
Yeah, sometimes out of the mouth of babes.
Go ahead.
They haven't deviated, even though they've been proven wrong all along the way.
Uh-huh.
And in chapter two of my book, I go through all the problems with the climate data, even now measuring temperature, which has a lot of uncertainty in it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have an historical record, so we don't really know how much the planet is warming. And these move through longer cycles, and actually warmer temperatures are better. Higher CO2 is better for the planet in terms of agriculture.
Right.
So it's basically they're trying to scare people by cherry-picking data, and they're now only focusing on the last 40 years to try and scare people into, again, supporting these aggressive policy actions. But
mm-mm-mm.
They haven't proven the argument at all.
Right.
And we should not be making economic decisions now because of a temperature forecast in 2100.
All right. So my question then for you, the next question is, why is it that thousands of major businesses, corporations in the world are conforming to this delusion?
Well, I think the problem is that the whole system is one of pressure. It's coercion.
And uh-huh.
When it comes to climate change, since the other side has been pushing this for decades, there are very few people, even within the academic circles, who are willing to aggressively speak out and say, you know, this is not true, and there are problems with the data, and there is no emergency, because no one wants to be called a climate denier. And I've been called that for the last 7 years just uh-huh. by raising questions around this.
Yeah.
So,
In other words, you're the anti-Greta Thunberg.
Yeah, exactly. Again, you have a young girl who, you know, skipped school during high school.
Right.
Unclear how she graduated, and now she's lecturing the world.
Yeah, she's become the goddess of globalism.
Right, and that's part of the marketing scheme where they hide behind children and young people because you can't debate young people, right?
Right.
So a lot of this has just been, you know, marketing gimmicks along the way. You know, the idea that we have a carbon budget for this planet is ludicrous. It's a carbon-based planet. But it all kind of is meant to simplify the issue and sell it to the public. And the problem is in schools, we're teaching that now. And here in New Jersey, they have climate change embedded in every core topic, right? Mm. Not just science, but everything across the board.
So it's indoctrination rather than teaching.
Right, and then, you know, one or two generations, we're going to lose that battle because they all become adults at that point, and I see this when I teach at the graduate level.
Uh-huh.
You do have people in their 30s, they've already made up their mind about climate change, so it's going to take a lot, but I think that explains why companies and basically everyone is kind of, you know, reticent to speak out against it.
Sure.
Because ESG at its core is climate change, so if you want to oppose sustainability in ESG, then you immediately have to get into a fight about climate change. And no one really has shown the backbone to do that.
Especially when the Pope has come on board and is promoting it and lining himself with not just the ESG promotion, but DEI, and basically conforming even the alleged morality originally stood for by the Roman Catholic Church into something that conforms more to the ESG and DEI concepts.
Yeah, well, I'm Lutheran, so probably I don't have an opinion on the Catholic Church, but it just shows you how crazy the argument being made. You know, 500 years ago, they persecuted Galileo for his scientific beliefs,
mm-hmm.
and now you have the Catholic Church supporting and telling all of its flock that they need to follow the science on climate change.
Yeah.
With all of the other world's pressing issues that we have, we get encyclicals talking about climate change. So it just shows you how it's kind of an upside-down world when it comes to the thinking.
All right. Just a few moments ago, you mentioned the word pressure, that the corporations in the world are conforming due to pressure. Did you know that the Greek word pressure in the New Testament is translated tribulation? So the word tribulation that occurs in the King James Version of the Bible comes directly from the Greek word pressure. So what we're experiencing here is increasing pressure that's being brought on the entire world. You're talking about it coming through economics, but it's coming in various other ways that we talk about here on this program. Pressure. And people have a hard time standing when the pressure builds, don't they?
Yeah, and I think we saw that during the pandemic. It didn't require a lot of pressure on many people. I mean, just the inability to go into a Starbucks or to go out and eat was enough to get people to take a vaccine that was unproven.
Yeah, and now they're suffering the consequences. The latest reports are that 17 million people lost their lives, not from the pandemic, but from the jabs.
Yeah.
17 million.
I do think that the pandemic around COVID was kind of a test run for what may be coming down the pike with a climate emergency and you know, trying to use that as a justification for even more regulatory push around the climate agenda.
I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because I agree with it wholeheartedly. It was a premonition, shall we say, a test case of that which is to come. I'm even... Klaus Schwab of the World Economic Forum says you got to seize that opportunity. This is our great opportunity. We're going to launch globalism. We're going to launch the Great Reset. Don't let this go without taking advantage. The pandemic represents a rare but narrow window of opportunity to reflect, reimagine, and reset our world. That's what it was about.
Yeah, I think, you know, the World Economic Forum, you know, they basically, in this whole coordinated scheme, they're the ones that are issuing white papers that are like trial balloons around some of these ideas. But they actually are starting to implement a lot of it. So to discount it, you know, I think is something we should not be doing. I mean, just the idea of 15-minute cities is being implemented over in Europe. I mean, particularly in the U.K.
It's being implemented in the United States and even in Richmond, Virginia. My wife and I are commenting about all of the high-rise residential structures that are going up. They almost look like tenement houses or government barricades. Or it's amazing. They're going up everywhere. It's also about these 15-minute cities, I think. It's about exactly what you're talking about. Sustainability, socialism by proxy. We'll be right back, friends. The Race to Zero.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, "I'll build my church." Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, "Behold how they love one another." Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
The book, again, which I urge you to consider, my friends, The Race to Zero, a hardbound book, How ESG Investing Will Crater the Global Financial System. $27. We'll put it in your hands. It's on our website, saveus.org. Well worth the price, by the way. on our website, saveus.org. Give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check at $5 for postage and handling. We've discovered that this is basically underlying a religious enterprise. It's not based upon pursuit of God, but pursuit of government as the ultimate diviner of truth and of love and affection for humankind. So, lurking below the ESG terminology is the word sustainability. It's become a prerequisite of strategic planning. It was only a matter of time, says our guest, before it became a discriminant factor in the investment process, which when allocating capital to these same companies. So let's talk about the investment aspect. The majority of people don't really, the average person in America doesn't really think in terms of social things and great investments and the corporations and all of the things they're invested in. But more and more, we're finding that these corporations are divining, shall we say, not deciding, but divining how they use investors' money in order to accomplish these false agendas that are anti-God at the very heart and are designed to control the entire world through money. How do we understand this? Give us a few words, Paul, because you're the guy with 40 years expertise in Wall Street and in so many of these other companies. Give us the clues that we need.
Yeah, so the first point I would make is it is, as you mentioned before, it is a pressurized system, and both in the markets as well as, you know, overall society. You know, clearly we're kind of living through a time of troubles, I think,
mm-hmm.
and tribulation is probably a fair way to characterize.
Is this the time of Jacob's trouble that the prophet Jeremiah talked about?
Well, my wife and I often say it feels like we're living in biblical times, you know, right now.
Oh, we are, brother, we are.
it's amazing that, you know, we've accomplished so much in terms of technology and development, and yet, you know, there's so much conflict and really at every level of the economy and politically,
yeah.
and you would think we would have, you know, evolved to a greater state at this point. But, you know, I think you have to look at the underlying cause, a lot of which is people in government that are pushing an agenda that is not meant to solve the problems of the world. It's meant to justify even bigger government,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, if everyone is in conflict always, then the only way you can solve that is by the government coming in.
In other words, by government becoming a quasi-god, a surrogate god, to solve all our needs, to provide all of our needs, to save us from all of our, whatever our collective sins are, government will do it all for us. Just trust us, right?
Sure. I mean, you've seen that in the schools over the last few years.
Sure.
In terms of them trying to push this aggressive, you know, sex education, transgender ideology on very, very young children. And that's a way to basically further break down the family on top of all the other policies going
exactly.
on in the 60s that have already accomplished that. Right. So it's always it's replacing family faith with government.
Mm-hmm.
As you say,
exactly.
The ultimate God. So,
and that's, you know, that's what the Bible foretells. What we're living in, I mean, you said you and your wife think maybe we're living in biblical times. Indeed, we're rebuilding the Tower of Babel, the very thing that God hated.
Yeah, and actually I use that analogy for what's going on in the financial markets with ESG, because it is such a chaotic system when you look at what they mean by ES and G. You can't rationalize any of it. So you always have to look to a third party and someone outside the markets to be the referee, and that's going to be an NGO or the United Nations
mm-hmm.
or someone in government to tell you what the priority is. And right now, the
priority, Bill Gates,
right? Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
The priority is going to be climate change, and we have to get to net zero, and that actually will have the most economic impact on Americans. Not as much as like DEI and some of the more woke issues. Not to minimize any of this, because, you know, DEI and CRT, if you have a young family right now with children in school, my wife and I are thankful that our kids are grown and out of college at this point, because that's a daily battle, getting a good education for your kids right now with the agenda being pushed. But I think a lot of that distracts away from the real core of ESG, which needs to be remain on climate change, because that's really going to have the most damage on the country.
Okay. So the question then is, how you use the word pressure, that it's coming on corporations by pressure, but how is that pressure implemented? They have to have government, the UN, World Economic Forum, somebody has to have levers in order to place that pressure upon these corporations. How do they do it?
So the way it works is that, coming out of the 2008 financial crisis, Wall Street had an image problem, obviously.
So
ESG came along right at the perfect time, because with ESG and sustainability, it allows you to signal your virtue.
So virtue. We're going to recapture virtue, not through moral virtue from God's viewpoint, but a whole new system of virtue signaling.
Exactly. So everyone got suckered into the ESG initially because it allowed them to signal their virtue and work on their image. And they were told initially that, you know, you can do ESG, you know, however you want. It's a voluntary system. It's aspirational. And that slowly has changed to becoming more prescriptive. And that's really kicked in since 2015, when we passed the Paris Agreement, when we passed the 2030 Sustainable Development Goals.
Right.
So now the ESG program is prescriptive. And then the next phase between now and 2030, which will be a darker phase, you're going to have regulations enforcing it on everybody.
And but that's exactly what the UN is intending to do this very year through a new treaty, using the pandemic aspect as the rationale for it. It's the scariest thing that you can possibly imagine. It will completely undo national sovereignty of the nations of the earth, including the U.S.
Right. So the WHO pandemic treaty,
exactly,
which is supposed to be voted on this month, it should be interesting to see if they try and recharacterize climate as a health emergency. I would not put that past them.
Right.
But the way ESG has worked is that first you get Wall Street suckered into it, and then all of the investors, really right now, everyone on Wall Street is a member of the United Nations advocacy group, the principles for responsible investment, and with that membership comes requirements to integrate ESG into all of their portfolios.
What if they would decide not to be a member?
Well,
would that be signing a death warrant or what?
Yeah, the way it works with ESG, if you speak out, if you object, then you become the next target. So at your next annual meeting, you're going to have protesters and a flash mob to deal with. You may have to deal with a proxy fight. You're going to have to deal with, you know, negative news flow from activists, right? And clearly, public CEOs don't want to have to deal with that bad press.
Right.
So that's a lack of, I think, backbone at the corporate level. And the problem is, you know, they set sustainability policy for the entire firm. So if you work for any of these firms, which is basically everybody, then you can't really speak out, because then you're challenging the CEO, which can, you know, lead to a shorter career.
A very short career.
So first you get the financial firms on board, and then they pressure all of the companies that they invest in that you have to do this. And the implicit threat is, if you don't do this, we're not going to allocate capital to your company. And that's been very effective at getting everyone on board with the entire ESG agenda. So you see that with companies issuing pronouncement about every social an environmental issue these days, you know, even third rail issues like abortion. I mean, there's no reason why financial institutions should be coming out and making a statement about abortion. But they're doing it because everyone's under duress.
Well, one company just came under duress for taking their position to support Hamas, and I'm not going to mention the name of the company, but as I recall, their stock dropped 20% because the CEO decided to come out and support Hamas, and it can be a two-edged sword.
No, it is, and clearly the last couple of years there's been more anti-ESG pushback Bud Light would be a good example where, you know, where they get over their skis and, you know, they lose significant market share and revenues. But they still, a year later, you haven't seen Anheuser-Busch InBev really come out and clear the air and apologize and set things straight because they're afraid.
Exactly.
So it's fear that motivates everyone to stay in line. And if we're going to reverse this thing, we have to come up with a plan to remove the pressure on everyone involved.
My dear friend, you have just, through your economic viewpoint, you have just actually driven many different arrows directly into the very heart, the spiritual aspect of these issues, because fear has torment, the Bible says. Fear has torment. So when you don't fear God, you will fear man, his systems, and those that are being pressurized upon you. And so fear actually is not a healthy motivation in this regard. It is a motivation to get you to conform to that which you may not necessarily believe. But now you're required to do it, because if you don't, you're excised out of here.
Yeah, and I think the clearest example of how effective ESG has been using fear and pressure is if you look at the energy industry in this country, where clearly, I mean, we can all agree, they are the primary target, and they're an industry that ESG activists want to shut down. It's no longer about just squeezing more money out of them and getting a carbon tax. They want to shut down oil and gas production in this country.
All right, so why then this very day is it reported that Joe Biden is seeking to negotiate behind the scenes a deal with Saudi Arabia to give them nuclear power in exchange for less expensive gas? I thought they were trying to diminish the flow of the carbon. It appears not necessarily.
Yeah, it's with climate change and sustainable development and even ESG investing, it's a two-tiered system. And it's always been, really, going back to the 80s, right? So a different standard is there for Europe and the U.S., developed countries, the industrialized West, and then the emerging market countries, including China and India, which we can debate where they fall in. They are held to a different standard.
Right.
So we're deindustrializing. We are cutting emissions here and in Europe, and China and India are increasing theirs, right? So we're not going to solve this global problem of climate change to the extent that it even exists,
right?
Because not everyone is playing along. But this has always been a wealth transfer.
Including China, yeah.
Right. I mean, China's the worst offender. They're gaming the system. And it's the same with ESG investing. We apply the standards of ESG more harshly to public companies in the U.S., versus emerging market corporates, which is just crazy because clearly the latter category is much more risky as an investment.
Absolutely. So finally, Paul, by the way, I've really enjoyed the conversation with you. Really have. Tell us what you would ultimately say in a functional way to those who are listening today, hearing all of this real quickly, 30 seconds.
I think people need to be more aware of what's going on vis-a-vis climate change and ESG, because I think it'll be the most effective policy that will cut oil and gas production in this country. And I think you need to pressure your Republican lawmakers to lead the charge, because it's going to take government resources to break down the regulatory complex and reverse all of these laws that have sprouted up the last few years. You know, through non-democratic means. And also, lastly, obviously, this election coming up in November is going to be key in terms of reversing a lot of these ESG policies.
Thank you, Paul, for joining us here on Viewpoint today. Again, The Race to Zero, friend, the book, $27 in your hands, right on our website, saveus.org. Become a partner with us. Send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia 23255. Don't wait for the other guy to do it. He's not doing it.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.